When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 44, Hlothere and Eodrich. After the death of Egfrith in 673, the throne of Kent passed to his younger brother, Hlothere. There is some debate as to whether Hlothere succeeded Egbert immediately or after an interregnum. The case for an interregnum of about a year comes from a charter issued by Hlothere in 675, which identifies that as the first year of his reign. The older date, 673, is based on Bede's history, which, while on the whole very useful, is often somewhat off in its dates. So many scholars now agree that Hlothere succeeded following a brief period of uncertainty in Kent. What exactly happened in this period is unknown, since, possibly to project an image of solid authority, many texts follow Bede in suggesting an immediate succession. Quite probably, 674 saw some wheeling and dealing to figure out if Egbert's son Eodrich, who probably was still only a child at the time, had enough support to become king. In the end, it was decided he did not. While this may suggest some instability in Kent in the 670s, when seen as part of the kingdom's larger political history, it's clear that the line of Eochenbert had now fully established its grip on the Kentish throne. However, the uncertainty that greeted Hlothere's reign was an ominous foretaste of troubles to come. These troubles were partly the result of shifting relations in the international politics of England in the 670s. The marriage of Kentish nobles at this time suggests that Kent was trying to build alliances with other kingdoms, in particular with Mercia and the East Anglians, both of whom sought to establish marriage ties with the Kentish royal family. Hlothere's sister Eormenhild married Wulfhere, king of the Mercians, and thus making the Mercian king the uncle to Eochenbert's children. However, Wulfhere died in 675, so shortly after Hlothere became king, at which point Wulfhere's brother Ethelred became king of the Mercians. The marriage links between Mercia and Kent having thus dissolved, and Ethelred adopting a much more aggressive and expansionist policy than that of his older brother, Kent became a target for Mercian ambitions. In 676, as a means to assert his power, Ethelred launched a massive raid into Kent. Bede tells us that this raid saw the widespread pillaging of churches and monasteries, as well as seeing Rochester burned to the ground. To give a sense of how thoroughly Kent was ravaged, Bede relates that the Bishop of Rochester, Putta, was driven from the see never to return. The effects of this raid were so long-lasting that even Putta's successor, a man named Quickhelm, resigned from the post not long after taking office due to the lack of resources. The historical fact of Putta's and Quickhelm's resignations suggests that there is some truth to the story of Ethelred's raid, but how much is a matter of debate. Certainly the idea that Ethelred would encourage the large-scale pillaging of churches and monasteries seems difficult to reconcile with the image we find of him in other sources as a devout and pious Christian. Despite the humiliation wrought by Ethelred, Hlothere remained on the throne of Kent. Not only this, he seems to have retained control of the tools of royal government. It is from Hlothere's reign that we get the earliest authentic charters issued by a Kentish king. The first of these I mentioned at the start of this episode, and it's the text which dates the first year of Hlothere's reign. The second text is from 679, and therefore demonstrates that the Mercian raid had not totally derailed the workings of Hlothara's kingdom. Just as a brief aside, although Hlothara is the first Kentish king from whom authentic charters survive, that he issued one in the first year of his reign, which follows the usual pattern of charters in the late 7th century, suggests that he was not the first Kentish king to issue such charters. Rather, the infrastructure must have already existed in 675, even though no instances of earlier Kentish kings using it have survived. Kent under Hlothara, then, seems to have been doing fairly well for itself in the late 670s.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
History is the greatest adventure story, but does it ever leave you wondering what the women were doing all that time? This is Lori from the Her Half of History podcast, and the answer is that some women were seizing power, or escaping slavery, or spying for their country, or creating artistic masterpieces, while countless others were doing the laundry, getting married, and wondering why their clothes don't have more pockets. If you would like to hear the stories of women doing all of those things, check out Her Half of History at herhalfofhistory.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy what I'm doing here, then it really helps me when you leave a review or a rating on the podcast provider you're using to listen to this, when you subscribe to the show's YouTube channel, and when you become a supporter over on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, and transcripts by pledging to one of the show's patron tiers. And speaking of patrons, I want to give a shout out to Natasha Bieli and Bruce Elwood, who recently became patrons. I also want to correct the pronunciation of a patron name previously shouted out. Thank you to Father Christopher Machelek. I hope I pronounced your name correctly this time. Thank you so much for your support, and I hope that you're enjoying the extra material that you now have access to. Anyway, back to the show. However, this image of prosperity is somewhat illusory. In fact, Hlothara's reign presents a problem to historians of early Kent on account of the unclear relationship that existed between the king and his nephew Eadric. Specifically, there is ongoing debate as to whether or not Hlothara and Eadric ruled jointly. We are not told in any of the surviving accounts of Hlothara's reign that he ruled jointly with Eadric. Even his charters make no reference to Eadric serving as his co-ruler, although the practice of co-rulership is certainly attested in early Kent. This makes it puzzling, then, that there exists a law code, the rubric of which asserts that it was issued by both Hlothara and Eadric. The code, which conveniently is usually called the Laws of Hlothara and Eadric, in most histories, cannot be dated with any more precision than the dates of Hlothara's reign, so 675 to 685. It's possible that it was issued by the two kings ruling jointly, but another possibility is that the code was initially drafted by Hlothara and then revised and issued by Eadric. To understand this, let me briefly explain how the two princes dealt with each other during the reign of Hlothere. In the Charter of 679, Hlothere greets his nephew warmly as Eardrich, son of my brother. This doesn't suggest that there was any tension between the two of them at the time. However, in 685, Eardrich launched a coup against his uncle by aligning himself with Athelwale of Sussex. The South Saxon king gave Eardrich use of an army, with which he invaded Kent and defeated Hlothere in battle. Although he survived the battle, and we don't know where this battle occurred, we're not told anywhere where it occurred, Hlothere was wounded and died shortly after from his injuries. At this point, Eardrich assumed sole kingship of Kent, and possibly rewrote and issued the laws of Hlothere and Eardrich. Eardrich, though, would only reign for about a year. In 685, possibly sensing that the South Saxons had been weakened by their support of Eardrich, a Gawissan warlord named Cadwalla launched an invasion of Sussex and deposed Athelwale. Shortly thereafter, Cadwalla returned to Gawissa and became king of that kingdom. See the episode on Cadwalla for more on that. Now with the might of the Gawissan army backing him, in 686, Cadwalla invaded Kent so as to secure his overlordship of England south of the Thames. During this invasion, Eardrich was killed, and Cadwalla opted to fill the now empty throne with his brother Mull, who would then rule Kent as a puppet king under the Gawissans. This was the first time that Kent would become a puppet to a more powerful neighbour. But I'll say more on that in the next episode. For now, I wanted to circle back and look at the laws of Hlothere and Eardrich and see what they can tell us about Kentish society in the late 6th century. Perhaps one surprising thing about the laws is how thoroughly secular they are. It makes no rulings on ecclesiastical affairs. Instead, its main focus is on legal arbitration. One difference between these laws and the earlier law code issued by Ethelbert is that the laws of Hlothere and Eardrich are organised by the type of crime being arbitrated, rather than by social rank. This isn't to say that Kent had become a more egalitarian place during the intervening decades. The laws still refer to the differences between classes and the different value placed on their lives, but it does suggest a change in the way that crimes were being approached by emphasising the crime itself over establishing the rank of the victim. Certainly, it's a small change, but history often tends to advance in baby steps. Besides these changing attitudes to class, the laws quite clearly set out the arbitration process, and this can give us an interesting insight into the way that the Anglo-Saxon legal system functioned. Accusations were made at assemblies in traditional meeting places. The accused then had to take an oath promising to abide by the decision of a judge or to accept a fine of 12 shillings. After 3 days had elapsed, the accuser and the accused then had to find an arbitrator acceptable to both of them. This arbitrator then made a judgment. Once this had been delivered, the one ruled against had 7 days to make good to the other, either with money or with an oath, as the accuser wished. If the accused refused to cooperate, he was then liable to a fine of 100 shillings, equivalent to the ware guild of a freeman, and was forbidden from swearing an oath of innocence in the future. The oath was an integral part of the Anglo-Saxon legal system. Often sworn on relics, an oath was held to be supported by divine justice, and thus violating an oath or swearing one falsely was a serious crime. Oath swearing would not only fall on the parties in an arbitration, it was also necessary to act as a witness for any legal transaction, or to defend the innocence of another person who was accused. Thus, one who was forbidden from swearing an oath not only became unable to protest their innocence in the future, but they also could not help their kin and friends if they came into trouble. Thus, it was not a punishment to be taken lightly. The laws of Hlothere and Eardrich make it clear that Kent at this time had a developed traditional legal system that the kings were seeking to regulate. The spectre of blood feud is not as present in these laws as it was in Athelbert's, suggesting that those earlier laws had gone some way in discouraging the practice. In its place, a system of weregild and arbitration had come to predominate, and seemingly this was now the de facto functioning of the legal system throughout Kent. In the realm of kings and royal politics, though, arbitration was often not possible, as Hlothera and Eadric both discovered when they met their ends on bloody battlefields. Not only did this deprive them of the throne and destabilise the dominance of the heirs of Eorkenbert, but it also saw Kent's independence undone, albeit only for a time, by the rapine of power-hungry warlords. This, sadly, would become a common feature of Kentish history from this point on. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. As always, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you'll join me again next time.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.